So I want to try to cover some of, or all, of the halacha that pertains to, there's a cleaning part of Pesach. So you think like, okay, you're clean, you're done. No, not at all, right? And there are a lot of other elements that go into it, whether it be Erev Pesach, the preparation for the Seder, that have a lot of halachic elements to it. That is just, I think, I find that a lot of these halachas are often conveyed to men at different points in time, between Mechamar, like, I don't know, these are things that we end up talking about, but that I think that these are things that are not often communicated well or smoothly in other ways. So that's why I wanted to try to cover them, and so everybody can get can have from this. Okay, so first of all, so we are right now, we have just entered Chodesh Nisan, so Chodesh, yeah. So we have, there is the concept, first of all, of Ma'os Chitim, of giving money to help others make Pesach, is a, that's actually a Shulchan Aruch Halacha, that's a real thing. Back in the day when Jewish communities had real power over the people that were in it, so they had the power to tax, and they had, so this was one of those things, and it was something that everyone who was a resident of a community or a town would have to participate, and so therefore it's what we do now is, obviously we don't have those kinds of powers, but one should try to contribute something towards that. During the month of Nisan, so there are certain tweaks in tefillah that really don't often apply to women. Tachanon is not said. Women don't say that anyway, generally. So there is that is during the month. As we get... No.
Is that always for the...
Anytime, yeah. Anytime there's no Tachanon, there's no Tzidkascha, and there's no Avarachamim, Shabbos Musaf. Those three things align. So yeah, it didn't happen. So then we get closer to Pesach and we hit Shabbos HaGadol. Shabbos HaGadol has it has its significance in that it reminds us of it's right before Pesach. It's the time that the Jewish people back in we just landed in Parshas Chodesh when they took the lamb for their Korban Pesach. That's what that is, but from a practical perspective, Shabbos HaGadol is a time when people have, number one, there are those that have a minhag to recite the Haggadah. That's one thing that some people do. And also there is just a minhag. It's just a minhag, and there is a counter minhag. So in other words, like, there's a minhag to do it, and there's a minhag to not do it. So that also exists.
Regular one, right?
Yeah. So you start from like Avodim Hayinu, and you go through the paragraph that's after Dayenu. So that is
Shabbos HaGadol. I said they have a Haggadah there for that. I said, oh, you have to have a special Haggadah for that?
No, it's the same one.
So I missed out on that one.
Yeah. same one. So that is that's Shabbos HaGadol.
What do you recommend to do or not to do?
I do it. I don't like using the term most people, but like a lot of people do it. I think it's a decently common minhag. This fly is exceptionally. Okay, so I'm gonna just have to get him. Okay.
Over the tea.
Yeah, I was about to say, get him. What is this guy's? There we go. Okay. See you later. Okay, so then mechiras chametz, selling chametz. So that is something that don't try this at home. It's not something that one should do on their own, but it is something that even if one thinks that they are getting rid of all of their chametz, mechiras chametz is an extremely handy tool for us to assure that we are not running into any chametz ownership issues. And the contract, as much as it may seem to have a lot of words on it, and it asks you to say where things are, but there is a catch-all phrase in every contract that says, and any other chametz that I didn't list, and I don't even know where it is and wherever it may be. So that's always going to be covered in a sale of chametz. And therefore, it is a, so it's a good idea to do, it's an important idea to do it. Yes.
So you know that, like, you put pans away, and, like, you just, do you say chametz to everything? Or if, like, there's a silverware bowl, and there's no, it's, you know, there's, like, there's chametz, and then there's, like, stuff that you're just closing up. Do you say chametz on everything? Because I've seen people, like, they don't. So what do you put, like, the word? Like, what do you think?
So you, the, honestly, what you're selling, like, it doesn't even matter that you're fully aware of that. The important thing is that you label everything that is problematic for Pesach.
Okay.
Because the trouble comes when, did I mention this in the Pesach shir? The lady with the guy with the gloves. That was, and I know another story of somebody who sent a grandkid into the kitchen to get a fork. So the grandkid knows where the forks are during the rest of the year, and opened a drawer, and it wasn't hard to open. So what you want to do is you want to have it with some sort of like chametz thing on it, and if you can tape it or tie it or something it in a way that just makes it, that there is some kind of like, you know, this is, wait, why is this not easily opening, right? And give you that mental trigger of like, oh, yeah, there's a problem here. Or a kid's going to realize that like there's something going on here because this has tape, string, there's something on it. That's really the best way to go. There is a minhag, and I would call that a minhag also, to even have one's chametz things covered, so like in a glass break front, to even like put paper up on that. That is not the norm, but if you've seen it, it exists. That is a minhag that is out there. You do not have to do it. No. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
One last thing. People come into your house and you're like, why isn't that covered?
But you have to, I guess you have to tape it. Right?
Yeah. So you tape it, but like, you know, that you have to cover it with paper or something like that. That's not necessary.
You just don't put a box of Cheerios in there that everybody can. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. No box of Cheerios in the break front. Right.
Remember when they used to send out sample boxes of cereal in the mail? On
Pesach, yeah, it's inevitable, right? It's that inevitable.
No,
they don't give you free things anymore.
Yeah. No free things.
Okay, so the Mechiras Chametz, so that will, that usually takes, it's best to be done in person. That is the best way to do it. It can be done online. It's interesting. It's like, it was always like very, very, like, I don't know if the word is looked down upon, but people were dissuaded from like doing these things online and over the phone, and then COVID happened. And then it was just like, yeah, everybody do it online, and then I have all these phone calls coming like, but Rabbi, like everyone always said that you shouldn't do it that way. Well, unless there's COVID, right? So, so it can be done otherwise, but it is best to be done in person with an actual physical kinyan that's done. And that is how we deal with the Mechiras Chametz. Yes.
So growing up, I always remember my father was showing me to give money, like some tzedakah towards it. Is that something, I mean, Gary, I always tell Gary you have to do that. So is that something you're supposed to do?
Or there's a minhag. There's a minhag to give something with to make it, it sort of legitimizes like the whole thing that's going on. So there is something about that, but that's certainly not a necessity. Okay, then we get to, yeah.
Back just for a second. So as a woman now, I would be doing, filling out the
yes.
shiar and bringing it to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll set a time that you know, I'll post sometimes that I'm available, or otherwise just we'll figure out a way to work it out. Sure. Okay, so then we get to, so that last Shabbos is kind of, that Shabbos HaGadol is kind of tricky, because it's pretty close to Pesach, right? And then we have, so, oh, matzah. Matzah, halachically, is not allowed to be eaten on Erev Pesach. Minhag-wise, there are some people who will not eat it from Purim. And then there are others, there's, I think, you know, and I again, I don't like to say what's the most common minhag, but there's quite a common minhag that already in Chodesh Nisan, starting from now, no matzah. So that applies to regular matzah, the type of matzah that one can use on Pesach. So egg matzah or grape matzah or whatever, they have certain manischewitz thingies like that. Those would be not considered absolute chametz, and at the same time usable, like, you know, if somebody would want to use that on Shabbos HaGadol. I mean, the truth is that I don't think it's, people have to like super sweat it. Like, again, you have challah, keep track of the large pieces of it, the crumbs, go on a plastic tablecloth, wrap it up, throw it out. It's okay. Like, and if that gets on the floor, it's also okay. So that everybody has their feelings about that, and everybody can follow their sense of it, but from a halacha perspective, it's okay to have some challah and the last supper type of thing. Yeah, whatever. Okay, anyway. Okay, so now, bedikas chametz. So on Sunday night is when prime time for bedikas chametz is. If someone is home on Sunday night, even if they will be going away for Pesach, they do bedikas chametz with a bracha in their house on Sunday night. So even if somebody's going to Baltimore or New York or wherever it is, and they're driving that day, they're driving on Erev Pesach, but if you're home during that time, then you are there for bedikas chametz. You make a bracha, you put out the 10 pieces of bread, that's the common minhag, or 10 Cheerios, or whatever you want to do. And then that you make a bracha, you find your chametz, you sequester it overnight, and the next day you would burn that chametz. That's the process. After, also at night, there is a formula that we say, it's found in the front of every Haggadah. There's one that is for Sunday night, there's one that's for Monday morning. They're a little bit different in the words. And one, you could say it in Aramaic, it's Aramaic, so it's even harder than regular Hebrew. But you should definitely say it in English, so that if your Aramaic isn't so fresh. So that, because the idea is that you are meaning what you're saying, it's not just some random formula to, you know, magical formula or something. It's something that you have to say. Yes.
You have to wait until it's all burned before you say that last bracha? Or just
so beer? On Thursday night?
No, I mean like the next morning.
On the Monday. So we'll talk about the beer in a second. Hold on. So on Thursday night, so when you're searching.
Sunday night.
On Sunday night, that would be bad. On Sunday night, when you're searching. So there are two ways that people do the search for chametz. There are some people who will spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours, literally, no, all together. Just making sure, like they will, as though they just walked in and they have no idea if anybody ever cleaned anything in there, and they will really inspect every corner of every part to look for. Now, they're not looking for crumbs. They're looking for legitimate chametz, and they're searching everything. There is another.
In the dark?
With a flashlight. Yeah, in the dark, flashlight. Now, if it doesn't help you to have it be dark with the flashlight, that's very, it's ceremonial, but it's not always helpful. So, on the one hand, it gives you a spotlight. So, like, now I'm focused here, I'm focused here, I'm focused here. So, there is something to the darkness, and it, you know, it gives you that, it gives you kind of like that Pesach feeling, but If it doesn't do anything for you other than, you know, just, you know, make you not be able to see anything, obviously, then you don't have to do it that way. So the other way of doing it is, you know that you cleaned. And it's kind of just like, almost like checklisting. So you walk into a room and you see, like, here's a dresser. Like, so if someone else cleaned the dresser, you turn to them and you say, like, anybody do this? Yeah, we checked it. Oh, I remember I checked this a few nights ago. Let me just, yep, this is all good. This is a closet. We looked at this. Yeah, we looked at this. Okay, we checked that. And then it's just kind of going through things and looking everything over and just making sure that nothing was missed. And that goes a lot faster. That's the other way of doing it. When that is all over, then one says their beer chametz, their bittel chametz. They say that formula. Yeah. Some people do it with candles. Some people find that they're so nervous about the wax.
They don't
look for it. Okay. Or that they're nervous that they're going to go near a curtain. So, it's all... They always did back, you know, for thousands of years, they did it with a candle.
Before flashlights.
And then, so some people will light a candle and then switch to a flashlight. Some people will just use a flashlight. Now that we have phones, there's, you know, we have all kinds of, right? That's it. You just walk around with your phone, put on the flashlight. It's got a powerful flashlight, and then do things like that. That's all. So it's all those things are fine.
You really need to look at, because what we do, we usually have the stand pieces, and we look for pieces. I mean, while we're looking for pieces, we're looking, but we're not specifically looking on, you know, like, we don't do extra check. We need to do this extra check.
So it's like, you know, I would put it like this. So let's say you have 10 pieces. So you divide them up into 10 rooms, and or whatever, you know, two in a room, whatever, however many rooms you have. And then when you go into that room, you should kind of do a 360. Like, you know, I'm just like spinning it, looking around, like, okay, here's a dresser. That was cleaned. Here's a closet. We went through that. Here's this. And it could take 30 seconds. And then you find the piece, and you know where the piece is, and then, you know, you
and
grab
you
that.
If you forget, oh my gosh, I didn't clean this, and you
it will be away, right. So that's what you're accomplishing with it. Mm-hmm. So there's really an accomplishment going on at the time. So, yeah, that's, so it doesn't, and again, that's not something that has to take a long time. It's just, you know, you're looking around. Okay, all these bookcases, okay, they're all done. I mean, walk out, that's it.
My husband Sal was always afraid that he'd forget where he put something in one of the rooms, and so he would write down, you know, like a key.
We write of where they are?
Where they are.
Well, you got to keep count. That's it. You just count to 10. Count to 10. Keep all 10. Right. And don't, no sneaky kid things. Yeah, don't let them. And there's always that kid that puts out the 11th one. Oh, you didn't find that one, right? Yeah, it's not. Okay. And then also, technically a person should also do a bedika on their car. So, like, other things that we have should also have a b'dikas chametz done on them. So it would be kind of like when you're done with your house, you walk out and you look at your car. So now, most people have cleaned their car in advance of that, or they're going to sell the contents of their car and not drive it around. But that would be just something to just be mindful of, that that's part of a b'dika. So again, most of us have, by that time, already had the whole vacuum thing go on, and we've done it. So that would, again, just be kind of a cursory type of thing of, all right, yeah, we did this, right?
Our car had a crash on Sunday, so I said to David, well, we don't have to clean it. I don't know, I guess technically, I don't know if we still own it or not, but, you know, it's, you know, in the tow place, and it's not fixable.
It's totaled, yeah?
Yeah, it was 12 years old.
Okay.
So it was time.
Time for...
Hard to get around now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so what about when you have a rental?
So if somebody has a rental, they are responsible for it, and they would have to, yeah. Yeah, a lease, a rental, those are things that person has responsibility for. Things that you have a responsibility for are things that are kind of like, they're in your domain, and then you got to check them out. So that's Sunday night. Monday morning. Men have this Tanis Bechor thing that if somebody's a firstborn, they have a fast associated with that. Women, they got off clean on that one. Good for them. Now, eating on Erev Pesach. So, there are different eating issues. Number one, chametz. You could only have chametz up until a certain time. It's usually 10-something or other around here. After having, and of course, most people feel the need to have chametz on Erev Pesach. Like, that's like, we have to have that. So, you have it, no problem. Some people will brush their teeth after having that last chametz. If they're close to the edge of the Zman, so that they're not going to consume chametz after the Zman. But there is a specific time after the fourth hour of the day that no more eating. At that point, you're not... So then we become very limited in the foods that we can eat. So you can't have any more chametz. And as we mentioned before, matzah is totally off limits, as is baked matzah meal products. So if you have something that you bake with matzah meal, that also, so if you have, may have a brownie recipe or some other thing that you, or Pesach tikka rolls, whatever it is that people have, those kinds of things also are usher the entire Erev Pesach. What can you eat? So,
chocolate.
Yes, it's the ultimate comfort food. There you go, right? Also, kidneys also are not allowed to be eaten after that zman. So kidneys also, are good until that zman. And then as soon as you can't eat chametz, you shouldn't have kidneys either. Matzah meal products that are cooked are allowed. So matzah balls, knedlach, that's okay. Those kinds of things would be okay. Potato starch things are all good.
Not baked. You mean like you cannot do baked?
Right.
You can do cooked.
So cooked, right. So if you boiled your matzo balls, then that's fine. So if somebody would want to have chicken soup with a matzo ball, that would be 100% okay. Meat, fish, cheese, eggs, potato starch cakes, fruits, vegetables, those are all fine. There is a certain point in time that we stop eating even the cooked matzo meal products. Because what we're basically trying to do is we have a halachic requirement to come into the Seder hungry, which usually isn't hard, but that's something that we're supposed to do. So at the end of the ninth hour of the day, and I will post what time that is, it's usually in the, you know, in the mid-fours. So from that point forward, one is supposed to sort of like limit that they don't have like a real meal, and that they also don't have those kinds of real mizonos products. So, and again, it's pretty limited what anybody would eat that would be problematic anyway, like the matzo bowl. Basically, you don't have a matzo bowl after 4:30. And then those other foods, meat, fish, cheese, those kinds of things, you can have. You're not supposed to really have a significant meal at that point. So those are the eating limitations. So everybody has their, I know different families have like different minhagim or whatever. They have different things that they figure out how to, you know, stay sane and not, you know, and full, but still not eating the things that they shouldn't eat. Okay, yeah.
Does it apply to kids?
Under, I would say, over six should try to do this. Now, I just happen to be, for some families, I know of one family that they will have, what is it that they have French fries and hamburgers or hot dogs, yeah, something like that. So you can't have the bun, whatever, you know, so it's like, but like, they have this good food that kids like that they can eat, so they could be okay. Now, beer chametz, burning of chametz. So again, back earlier in the morning. So there's the time that you stop eating chametz, and then you have another halachic hour, so it ends up being like an hour plus a little bit, in which you are allowed to have chametz, benefit from chametz, but you can't eat it. So there's like this in-between time of like no eating, but yes, owning / benefiting from. You could really burn your chametz anytime you want during the day. So if at 8 o'clock in the morning you're done, you have no interest in eating anything anymore. That's chametz thick. So then you could burn your chametz, say the formula. After your chametz is burnt, you say the formula, and then you are out of chametz. You're done. You're out of the realm of chametz anymore.
Everybody should say it.
Really, everybody should say it. Yes, it's the type of thing that everybody should try to say. And again, in English and in a language that you understand, that's the best way to do it.
Should we burn it, or if someone's going to burn it?
Somebody's going to burn it. That's fine.
So we just say after that was burnt.
You stop eating chametz. Somebody's going to go burn it. What you want to do is there's a mitzvah to burn chametz, to tashbisu se'armi batechem, to burn it. So you want to have that burning take place on chametz that you own. When you say this formula, you are disowning all chametz. So what you want to do is have that I have chametz. I'm burning it. That's usually the stuff that you had from the night before. You're burning that stuff. Great. When that once that's burnt, then you say the formula, like you said before.
So it's better to wait until my husband comes home.
Yeah, and he tells you, I did it. Then okay. when you get the message, it's all done. Then you say it, and you're good. Some people have a minhag. I don't know how many times anybody here has attended Bir Chametz, but some people have a minhag to burn certain mitzvah items that they're getting rid of. We love him. Some people do all of their Hanukkah, like leftover wicks and oil and things like that. They throw that in also. Some people save it, some people don't. Those are things that there are different minhagim about. So this amount of chametz, this should all be done by, again, there's a time when this is all over. And once that is said, then we are done.
Can I do the burning for David? Because this is the first year that he has to work.
Absolutely.
That morning.
Anybody could do it.
Work, so I can do it for him.
Anybody could do it.
I mean, he burns it, but he doesn't stay till the end sometimes. Because if it's... he just has to get up earlier, I guess. I'll tell him.
A lot of times they start the fire here later.
Usually,
I don't know when they do it.
I mean, at KMS too, that's where I bring my load up now for the next few years. Because I don't think they want to take it here.
Yeah,
oh, they do it here.
They do?
Yeah.
They don't allow plastic or garbage.
Right. You can't bring a whole garbage.
No, I was saying that Lula, I didn't think they were taking that.
Okay. They do a little over here. Yeah. Do a lot of Lula. Yeah, it ends up being fuel. You know, that stuff ends up being... Yeah. No, helpful. Yeah.
It's the garbage stuff that we have to
do. Right.
Put it in
the garbage. Okay. Yeah, so this year. Okay, so, yeah. So just to reiterate that. So there are two... my recommendation is that you have your garbage limited... So let's say, I don't know how many garbage pails you have, how many garbage crates. So they take it on Wednesday morning, and Wednesday is going to be Yom Tov. Right. So, recommendation: Monday morning, early, take your garbage bin, take it out to the side, to the street. The garbage bins that we have are our own personal garbage bins; they're not city bins, right? So, and some there are different municipalities have different ways. Like we have our recycling things are all from the recycling company, I guess. I don't know who owns those exactly, but they're all, right, the same things. But our garbage cans are just things that we own. So it's not like you could say, in some places they say, oh, it's the city's bin, so therefore you put it in their thing, and then you put it out on the street, and now it's theirs, it's not yours. The way that that I work it, and that we work it here at Devad, is that when the sale happens, we tell the non-Jew that he's buying that chametz that's in your garbage cans, and that we get permission that the garbage gets taken by the garbage men on Wednesday morning, and that he's good, and that's the guy's garbage that's being taken. After that point, when your garbage cans have been emptied, even though they're not always empty, right? And there may be some lingering stuff. That's fine. All of that belongs to the guy. You could still take that, drag that back behind your house, and...
You can on Yom Tov?
No. Oh, I mean, after I would wait till after Yom Tov, just for the...
Sometimes it's in the street, and I find that, you know, you have to
I mean, I would wait till Wednesday night to drag it back, because just from a mukta perspective.
Right.
Right.
But can you add garbage? Like,
Yeah.
Like, can you go, so if you put it Monday, but Monday night you're going to say it, or you're going to maybe have two extra.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
Wednesday morning, you could take out any garbage.
Throughout Yom Tov, you could keep bringing out garbage and putting it out there, no problem.
Two bins and make sure
put them all out there.
Make sure the bins are out there.
Recycling, though, you said we can't do.
It's no, recycling too.
Oh, you can.
Yeah. I mean, I would have it all out in advance.
I'm going to wonder why all the Jews have stuff out a couple of days early.
Right. They'll probably figure it out. Yeah.
On the Wednesday night is.
And Wednesday night is already Chol HaMoed, right? So it's not even out for so long, right? So, yeah, that's pretty normal, right? Okay, so then, Erev Pesach in the afternoon has a somewhat of a Yom Tov component to it. One should sort of treat it like a Chol HaMoed, meaning like sewing, things like that are avoided. Laundry, once you be done with laundry. Good luck, right? Right?
It's almost like you have to get ready before Shabbat.
Yes. Right? This year, that Sunday is like, it's an intense Sunday. I agree with you, yeah.
When do you recommend to actually wash your kitchen? I mean, I'm not one of those people who do 2 weeks in advance.
Tomorrow.
No.
Yeah. I honestly, you could do it either before Shabbos or Matzi Shabbos. Matzi Shabbos, like the concept of Matzi Shabbos is that everything has been sitting for 24 hours with no hot water, nothing cooking, nothing doing. So anything that would need the 24 hour, you know,
that's what, then it's too late. No?
It's pretty late. So I mean, if you have time, if you're, you know, depends.
Oh, so much of Shabbos, it's too late.
Kashering, turning over your kitchen.
Sink. It's too late. There's a way to. Oh yeah, it's too late.
Meaning,
you can't use that sink on Shabbos.
You can use it with cold.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. You can't use
it. Right. So, you can kasher. I'm, you know, I don't know how much you want to. Yeah, I don't know how much you want to cook in advance. Yeah, then right. Yeah, it's about to.
You're cooking.
It's a tough day. Yeah. Now Monday you can cook. It's Chol HaMoed like. So therefore, it just means, so on Chol HaMoed, what do? We cook plenty. We, you know, but minor clothing repairs can be done. But we don't do haircuts. And we don't do, you know, making clothes. I mean, I don't know who's sewing on Erev Pesach anyway. If you got that kind of time, then whatever. But, you know, those kinds of things, cutting nails, those things should all be done before Chatzos. So in the morning. And then once that Chatzos time hits, so then one has this peaceful time in the afternoon that you could can't do anything else. Yeah, right. So yeah, Halavai, you know, and really it is Halavai because the Seder is like it's like one of these things where like we run ourselves ragged for the Seder and then like we hit the Seder and we're just like, oh come on, let's go. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. See you later. Right, the lullaby.
We have 2 days of it here.
Right, yeah, so we get a second day. It's true. At the Seder, we do not eat roasted meat or poultry. That's the minhag. It's brought down in halacha. If you have some water, so if you cook it and there's some sort of water in it, basically, if you stick the meat in a pan and there's no liquid that you put into the pan, that would be problematic. If you put even like a quarter of an inch of water at the bottom of the pan, or of wine, or of some other liquid, then that's no longer considered roasted. That's considered cooked, and you're okay.
What about this, like a jam, you know, like a duck sauce would be as long as there's liquid that liquefies
in no time at all, right? So as long as you're going to get like a little, you know, layer of liquid in there, and it's contained at the beginning, at least when you cook it, right? You start with it covered, so then it's cooking. That's yeah. So preparing the Seder plate, preparing things for the Seder plate, the zroa, so that's the forearm of an animal or the part of the wing of a, you know, of a chicken wing, but it's the part that's like attached to the body, like not like the, you know, so it's like the bigger part of the V.
Necks
or
something?
No. Don't they do chicken necks?
Someone gives you
like
as
well.
That's like
the,
not
the. Oh, they have that one
too.
Why are you?
Necks?
Right,
that's
I don't
know.
I've never seen that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that
I don't
what
know.
They were doing, like, weren't they done that? Yeah, Shalom sells this thing, but it's not like what you're talking about.
What is it? It's a neck?
Oh, it's
this
small.
Yeah. It's the part that they can never sell. It's like the fish head on Erev Rosh Hashanah, right? Yeah. I guess. I don't know. I mean, people...
Chicken wing?
A chicken wing. Like a zroa. Like a leg. Like an arm. Arm.
But can you use a chicken leg?
Some people do. Again, it's like they're... like,
in your
if he says it's a zroa, it's a zroa, no?
I don't know.
Yeah, but a leg is also would count. Yeah, the neck is... I never heard the neck before, but doesn't mean... Just because I never heard it doesn't mean it's not a thing. I don't know. I'm not saying anything. It's a... I mean, again, it's like something that's supposed to represent something else. So it should have some sort of meat on it. That's kind of like the thing. It should have some sort of like edible thingy on it. Very minimal, because even a chicken wing has, you know, almost nothing on it. And then it should be roasted, best case. Or some people will cook it and then they'll singe it over a flame somehow. You know, if you have an electric oven, it's a little hard to do it.
Can you be roasted in the oven if you have a roast?
Yeah, you could broil, right? Broil. Yeah, people broil it. Some people like to touch it to the coil, whatever. I don't know if you like it. That can...
And you can reuse it for the second Seder?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. One should not... It actually is a thing to eat it on the second day of Yom Tov. In other words, these items that we use... For mitzvah purposes, instead of throwing them out, it is a thing to eat it.
At the meal,
Yeah, like second, like after the second Seder.
Rabbi Troner said something about if you keep it for 2 weeks in your refrigerator and you can't really eat it anymore, then it's okay, discard it.
Okay, but that's.
Okay. You're saying you're supposed to eat it on the second day?
The word supposed to is, it has to be. It has to be appetite, like, you know, it's not the type of thing where, like, if...
It's not appetizing. But the wing sounds fine.
Yeah, if it's gross, then don't. But if it's okay, then if you can get somebody to eat it, then that's a good thing to do. It sits out, yeah, yeah. No, I'm it's for the hearty souls, yeah.
Like
Seder's 5 hours. Yeah.
No, it's sitting out for hours.
Hours.
Oh,
nice.
I thought I was supposed to go to the oldest daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll tell my daughter that. All right. Nice. Okay, good. Listen, you can get rid of anything by making it a segula for something, right? Right? You can get anybody to eat anything, right? Right, tell them it's good for a shut up. Boom, boom, right. You're fighting over it, right? Then you sell it for more than $5. Okay, then you boil and roast an egg. Okay, and again, if you're going to... So first, people usually make a hard-boiled egg, and then they take it, crack the shell, and then broil it or put it on the fire. If you do not crack the shell, then it will explode. Right.
And don't ever put it in your oven. I made that mistake.
What? You could put a match to it. You could put it. You can broil it if once you crack it. Yeah. That's just a practical.
I do it because I have a gas stove, so I do it.
Just a little crack. All you need is a little crack.
You just have to make sure that it won't. That there's no air in. Like it has to be able to. Whatever's in there is going to come out. So let it out. Then there are different minhagim as to how to arrange the Seder plate. There's most people just follow the one that they bought.
Right.
But there are two minhagim. One is like the Ramah, one is the Arizal. They are one is arranged actually if you just one is arranged like a double they're like a double segel, like a 1-2-3, 1-2-3, right? That's how they are if you think about it. And the order happens to go like in the order of the way we use things. So like furthest away from the person who's leading the Seder is going to be the egg and the Zeroah, because we don't, you know, right? And then closest is going to be like the Karpas, and then it kind of like works its way forward. So there is like actually sort of a logic to the Ramah setup, and then there's another setup. I highly recommend that people pre-measure and weigh their matzah before the Seder. The whole motzi matzah thing becomes a very intense mess for people, or just people get all like, you know, out of, because they're trying to eat the matzah at the same time, they have to measure it out. Everybody's, you know, what am I supposed to eat? That much, you know, then you have all that, all the different reactions. So measuring, right? Measuring is a way to make sure, first of all, if you weigh your matzah, you will eat much less matzah than if you're taking one of those like charts and like guesstimating how much it should be, right?
Some matzah is much heavier.
Yes, yeah, and it makes a difference. So weighing the matzah, and I'll put it out, but just different amounts of grams for each thing, and like you get kids, you get somebody to go and you know, get a grandkid or something, bag it up, baggies. Everybody sits, go wash, come back to the table. Everybody's got their little bag in front of them. The person who makes motzi matzah, he goes, he makes his motzi matzah. He takes from those pieces and eats himself. He takes like a chunk from each one, gives it to the person next to him. Take a little piece, take a little piece, take a little piece, pass it all around. Everybody's got their matzah with the shear. Everybody's got their little piece that goes along with it. And everybody can eat. And that is the smoothest way to do it. Because, and this is another thing, this is a very handy halacha. It's a handy halacha to know, is that from the time that one does rachza, right? So we get through magid, you do rachza, you wash your hands. So then after that, there's matzah, maror, and korech. Really, one should not speak from the time that they've done rachza, wash their hands, we make the bracha of hamotzi, and then we make the bracha of al achilas matzah, on the eating of matzah. So there are two brachas that we make on the matzah. That second bracha either goes on plain matzah, which is what we eat initially, or possibly on korech, because that's matzah and maror together, which is a thing that, you know, used to have Pesach matzah maror, used to have all three together. So really, from making the al achilas matzah through the end of korech, people should not be conversing, which keeps things moving. And, you know, just cuts out a lot of the drag on the Seder a lot of times. So that's something to keep in mind. So if all these things are measured out in advance about how much matzah everybody needs, and everybody's just able to like grab their baggie, have it right in front of them, they get their matzah, they have their maror, and everybody's ready to keep on moving, that's a smooth way to keep things going.
How many ounces again?
I'll send it out. Yeah, for different things, it's like different amounts. Like the korech is less because it's only midrabban, it's only rabbinic. The original thing has to have two. So
I'll give a, and Mara also, you have something. Scale,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you just do a regular, like a little food scale.
Yeah. A little food scale. Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. It's so convenient. Yeah,
such an easy thing.
Yeah.
Kids, what's the chiyuv and what's the priority? If they can't do it all, should they do one and have all of it, or should they do a little bit of each thing?
You know, matzah's like matzah's the main. I would say matzah's like super, quite important. Mar is also important, and then the korech is, you know, less important. But yeah, I prioritize it that way. 4 cups of wine.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Because it's still, after all these years, it's still confused, like, as to, like, you know, could you do it all using romaine, or could you do half and half, like with horseradish?
I mean, you could do.
It's
You could do romaine. Yeah. You could do iceberg.
You could.
Really? Yeah. Some people. Yeah. I think. I don't want to. I think Reverend Cutler used to use iceberg lettuce, romaine, iceberg, horseradish, combination thereof.
And it doesn't really matter. It's
all good.
You have to.
Nope. All good.
Okay.
All good. All good. Some people feel that the lettuce doesn't really give them a more thing because, like, we eat it all the time. I guess they didn't used to eat it all the time the way we do. So they want to have something a little more, you know, they want to have something a little more rough. So, you know, they have the little horseradish stuff. But, like,
but
it's not necessary. Not necessary. Absolutely not.
To have, like, middle part of
The stalk. So some people will have the stalk, but again, it's all kind of, it's all minug based. If you have the stalk, you, again, it's like, if you think about, it's kind of thick and like it has a decent amount of volume to it. So you really don't have to have a lot. It's not, these are not things that we really have to like pound
it's
down.
It's part of the Seder. That's the part I like, probably is the romaine lettuce.
Yeah, yeah. No, it tastes good. Right, right. Right, yeah. It is. It's cold. It's good. Yeah, you know, I'm with you, right? Okay, 4 cups of, well, just quickly, 4 cups of wine, very important. It's best to use red wine without sugar that is not mavushal. There are not that many wines like that out there.
It is better, though, right?
It is better, yes. But, and also, it's better to have alcoholic content than not. So wine is better than grape juice. At the same time, if that really doesn't work for someone, it doesn't work for someone. How much should a cup hold? So a cup should hold, so the minimum is 3.3 ounces, which is pretty small. The biggest sheer that's out there is 5.1 ounces. Most glasses are usually bigger than 5 ounces. That is the reality of it. You don't have to drink the whole thing. There is an Indian to drink the whole cup each time, but if you can drink Rove of the Kos, so if you have a 5 ounce, you know, 5.1 ounce Kos, and you are drinking Rove, so that means you're drinking 2.6 ounces 4 times. It's really not a lot of stuff. That being said, some people, the alcohol just totally doesn't go. That's fine. So go to grape juice. Even within grape juice, there are sugar issues that people have. And with all of that, so there are ways of, so first of all, there's light grape juice. Kind of makes a light grape juice,
okay.
Which says, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. And if you look on the Star K website, they actually have they have instructions for diabetics. As far as, first of all, if you use a minimum shear, like if you use a 4 ounce cup, let's say, and then you drink half of that, then you're only drinking 2 ounces. And if you use the 3.3 ounce cup and you drink half of that, you're really only drinking 1.7 ounces 4 times. So, and then if you water that down to a certain amount, you're really not having a lot. It doesn't, you can really minimize the sugar content of these things. So they have...
You can
drink, yeah, a little more than half, just a, you know, drop over half. So the Star K does have like a whole chart of how to handle this for the people with the glycemic issues.
And where is that? It's online or it's in their?
I think that part's online. I think that's free and online. Yeah. I mean, they have the books. Yeah, you could buy it, but like a lot of their stuff right now. A lot of the, not the product information, like, you know, I want to look up this syrup or whatever, but like the basic information, a lot of it is online and is available. So also just make sure at the Seder, you have to have shmura matzah. You can't just have like regular kosher Pesach matzah. It's got to be the real shmura stuff.
You have a shmura machine or shmura?
So there's hand matzah and there's machine matzah. The difference between them is a machine works like a machine, and meaning that there's no room for human error. The hand matzah, one of the things that that your matzah on Pesach for the Seder is supposed to have is it's supposed to be made with intent for it to be made for Pesach. So the people who are doing stuff, they're supposed to be saying l'shem matzah mitzvah, that I'm doing this for the sake of matzah mitzvah. So the hand matzah has the benefit of having human intent invested in it. With the machines, so is there human intent invested in the guy who pushes the button? Yes. But so there's a question about, like, you know, is that the best way to do things? There are Yekkies. Yekkas will exclusively have machine matzah, which kind of fits. Think about it. And others will specifically not have that. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he's not a Yekki, he would have the machine matzah. So if that's certainly, if a lot of people, obviously, going back thousands of years, we always had hand matzah. There was no such thing as a machine. So until 150 years ago. So the machine matzah is a new thing in a sense. But certainly if it's something having to do with, like, a person can't chew it, digest it, like it's just harder for them to have the machine matzah, to have the hand matzah, then the machine matzah is for sure fine. That's
What does it mean with this 18-minute matzah?
So what they're trying to say, so there are 18 minutes is the magic number of when something becomes chametz. The honest truth is that the amount of time it goes from water being added to the flour to coming out of the oven is a couple of minutes. It doesn't take that long. So on machine matzahs, some of them say 18-minute matzahs. And what that means is that they stop the machines every 18 minutes and they clean them.
So is that better than machine shmur, or is that fame, or...?
That would probably be... I think that the machine shmur, they should be... I think it's 18-minute matzah plus. I think that there's a difference. There's shmur matzah,
yeah,
and then there's 18-minute matzah, mm-hmm, and then there's just like Yehuda matzahs, you know, like kosher for Pesach matzahs.
Okay,
the question is that the machines are designed to move all the materials through it and not have anything left behind. Mm-hmm. The 18-minute matzahs, they stop the machines every 18 minutes and do a real clean out to make sure that there's nothing lingering there for longer than 18 minutes. Because if you just have like some random piece of dough that got stuck in a little thing and it's just hanging out there for 25 minutes, that's going to become chametz and then it ruins. It's not supposed to happen. But that's a thing. I think the Starkey's is...
So which is better to buy? If you want a machine, not for the Seder, but like for during the week, we only use shmur and matzah. So is there a difference if I buy machine shmur or 18-minute?
I think the 18-minute is not officially shmura.
Okay.
Right. I think there's more in the shmura. Shmura is that the grain has been watched from the time that it was harvested. Like there's a lot of... Shmira, there's a lot of watching going on.
There used to be like
Chabura matzah, they sell that also. That involves that there are more people involved and they are investing more oversight, insight, kavana into whatever it is going on. So those are certainly more more expensive.
So there's
more TLC that's put into it. It's put it like that.
He sent us from Israel for like 2 years in a row. It's much better tasting. It's foil wrapped. The first year, I think David brought it back because he was there for, I think, a bris.
Mm-hmm.
Second year, he gave it to somebody and we got a lot of cracked matzah.
Uh-huh.
And then after, I said to my son, you know, people are not going to sit there on their lap for 12 hours, so
right,
it doesn't come back in good condition.
Right,
you wanted to do that for us as a present.
Right, oh, that's nice.
First year was great.
Right. Right. Okay, so, you know, it's late, the hour's late. If you have any other questions, then you can ask, but otherwise we will...
Okay. Dry wine is better, right? Dry wine is better than...
If without sugar is better, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So there are some sweet wines. There's something called... Kedem, Matuk, Soft, Kal, and Rouge. that has, it's the bigger, like the jugs, like, you know, the glass jugs, those are non, they don't have sugar. Those don't have sugar, even though it has a sweetish taste. It's not, no sugar added. And the larger glass bottles are not mavushal. So that has that magic.
Not
mavushal.
Wait, what is it called?
Be careful. Matuk, M-A-T-U-K, right? If it's got that name in it, you're not going to find it. It's a Kedem wine. It's not like, you know, it's coming. No, nothing fancy about it. Sometimes it has no sugar, but it tastes sweet. Tastes sweet. Has no added sugar. It's sugary. Yeah, it's intrinsically sugary. So it has a sweetish taste. So the kal. There's a Kal one that's 5-6%. Yeah.
We usually get the.
Yeah.
Does it taste okay?
Yeah, it tastes okay.
Matuk has also how much alcohol in
there? That one's like 12,
it says,
11.
Maybe it says K-A-L or says
K-A-L. Yeah, K-A-L. Yeah, K-A-L. Matuk Kal.
Kedem.
Yeah.
It's like a very boring brand.
Yeah.
Do you have problems with the sulfites in wines and grape juices?
So there are, I'm saying, I think they.
I think that, I've only seen one in the area. Don't ask me the name of it.
Yeah.
They do, they're out there. Yeah, I don't know how much you can get here, right?
Yeah, I've only found one.
Right.
Can you take the Kal Light wine and still mix it with Kal Light grape juice to make it less, if you want to have that problem?
Less alcoholic.
Yeah.
There's a certain level. Again, I don't remember what it is. There's a certain point where we say like it's not considered alcohol anymore. Like 1% is like, we don't really like, okay. You know, there's a certain level where it's just like, come on, who are you fooling? But but I think it can go lower than 5%. But you could do it. Like, you know, if it's something that's bothering you, if it bothers you, then you know you can go to grape juice.
If you have health issues or a medication where. Alcohol would be problematic.
Grape juice.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. No, like grape juice is not a problematic thing to do in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. Go for it. Okay. All right. Have a good night.